This is a Collider.com audio interview.
You know, that's actually disappointing. Where's the typical Simon Pegg t-shirt?
I left it up in my room. I've got to go and do talk soup, so I'm going to get a anal about this. Let's get these right. I'm only in town for 24 hours.
Why is that?
Because I've got to go back for the premiere on Wednesday, so I've got to fly back tonight. I got in yesterday, and I fly back tonight.
So what's the weirdest celebrity encounter you've had?
That might have been with Jeff Bridges, actually, playing tabla drums in his trailer with on like the second day of us meeting. He bought some drums and he invited me to his trailer at lunchtime to learn to play, and I did, and he sort of taught me how to do it, and then I was sort of beavering away on them because he taught me how to do the, you know, the bending the note. And so I was gone, and then I just suddenly heard a guitar strumming, and I looked up and he was playing his guitar along, and we were kind of like jamming. And I went from not ever having met him to jamming in his trailer in 12 hours. It was quite bizarre.
What's the most Hollywood experience you've ever had since you've been on this journey?
God. I think another one with Jeff, actually, at the Iron Man premiere. I went out to say goodbye to him, and he was stood with his brother and John Voight, and I kind of just went up to say, I'm going, because he's ever such a nice man, Jeff, we get on very well. And he sort of put his arm around me and said, no, stay, and so I listened to John Voight tell an anecdote, and I'm just stood there like this with Jeff with his arm around me with Beau Bridges, just listening to, like, three Hollywood legends just chatting, having fun, and me on the end of it just sort of looking like I'd snuck in. But I think Hollywood is constantly, it happens every day when you're there, you know, you're constantly seeing odd, bizarre things. And myself and Edgar went to see Steven Spielberg on set recently, and we're chatting to him, and it just happened to be on the day when Tom Cruise came to visit set, so we ended up just all sat around the table talking about films. And Edgar and I were very, very cool and didn't sort of... it didn't even, you know, break stride. We just got on with it, had a good chat, and I went up the 405 that day just going, because it was so kind of odd. It was such a surreal situation to be in. That's coke.
Can you still go around LA without being recognised?
Yeah, of course.
Have you ever had any of those, you know, don't you know who I am moments?
No. I don't even know who I am. Why would I? No, God, no. God, heaven forbid. I don't know, people that do that misconstrue their place in the universe enormously. They mistake ass kissing and over management for self importance, and it's, you know, people don't trust actors, that's why they're treated so well.
I'm curious with How to Lose Friends. There was a reference to Gollum in the movie. I'm assuming that was in the original script.
To Gollum from Lord of the Rings,
yes.
As opposed to Gollum from I don't know what. Yeah, it was. Yeah,
you're lying.
No, well,
really.
Yeah.
Well, you're good at writing. So, did you bring anything to the script, or did you bring anything when you saw the movie that, you know, you improvised?
I've got cock on my hand, I think, is the only thing I improvised in the entire film. No, there was some. Occasionally, there was some room for improv, but generally speaking, Peter's script was really strong and, you know, and neat and structurally intact. That it didn't really need anything adding to it, and it was nice in that respect. It's nice to be able to hand over the reins to someone else and not have to have that production responsibility. I kind of prefer it when I do because I'm a control freak, but it wasn't necessary really to tamper with it too much. Bob obviously comes from a really improvisational background with Curb, so occasionally the biggest thing Bob would do though is it was funny because it was his first feature film, and he didn't know that he has to say cut. It was like, you know, the take would end and the camera would keep running, the celluloid, you could hear the dollars just whirring through the camera, and everyone was just going, Bob, say cut. And cut. Because he's just so used to working with video, which is cheap. But that was the only instance of his sort of naivety, I think.
Did you make a decision to play Sidney more goofy than bitter as he could have come across?
No, I'm just a terrible ham. I must admit, it was a nice change of pace for me to play the goof rather than in my own movies. I tend to write myself as the slightly more straight centre to it and let Nick Frost do all the goofing around. And that's because I'm just so unselfish as a writer, I can't help myself. That was irony, by the way. in this, you know, I had license to just be an idiot, and what better way to spend a day than that?
At the Junket for Choke, Brad Henke told us that he plays Kirk's alcoholic, abusive father, which was kind of fascinating. Do you have any good Star Trek things that you can let slide?
I got so many, but I can't let any of them slide.
Right.
It's all under wraps, so I've got to stay true to my secrecy agreement.
Well, in that case, also your tattoos.
Oh, they're personal.
apparently you have a thing for Cornettos, the ice cream. Can you get them here?
I think they're called a drumstick here or something, right. Are they? It looks like the kind of cone with the nuts around the top. They're famous. Although I think you can, in McDonald's now, they're doing Cornetto something. Anyway, not that I ever go there. We just decided to use this particular brand of ice cream in our first film, and then we thought we'd bring it back for the second, and now it seems to be a thematic constant in our work. So they've never given us any free ones. It's a bloody liberty, really.
I'm curious, before jumping back into How to Lose Friends, what's the status of getting an HD, like a Blu-ray version of Sean and Hot Fuzz?
I don't know, actually. I know it was released on... I know they were both released on HD.
Well, that's what, obviously.
You can get them on HD DVD, but I don't know about the Blu-ray. I'll have to look into that.
Okay, and getting into How to Lose Friends again, how tough of it is it of a day when you have to work with Megan Fox and Kirsten Dunst? And, you know, you have to possibly make out with one or both.
You get used to it. It's something that you kind of... It's a burden I carry, and not entirely happily. No, it was great and ridiculous as well. And, you know, they're both fantastic girls, and it was a pleasure working with... Both very different, you know. I mean, Kirsten is so experienced. You know, she's been doing it since she was three. She has an enormous amount of wisdom and professionalism. As does Megan, but Megan's very new to it. You know, she has a kind of, she's an ingenue. She's in many ways like Sophie, but more has more integrity and more intelligence.
Did you ever try to work into the rehearsal process a kissing scene with Kirsten in the rain?
Upside down.
Yes.
No. I have it on good authority that I'm the best right way up kisser she's ever experienced. Why did I say that? It's not true. She never said it. I was joking.
What's the funniest night out you've had recently? Like, it's in some kind of Hollywood.
I don't really do Hollywood, you know. I don't live here, and I don't. I mean, I come here every now and again, and I see my friends, you know, and kind of hang out a little bit. But I try not to exist in that world because it just, I don't know. I think it's slightly dangerous.
In what way?
Well, the minute you start going to those places where people photograph you, then the minute you start becoming property of someone else, that you start becoming a person rather than an actor, and it's hard to ask someone to believe that you're playing an 18th century dock worker if they've seen you the night before falling out of a bar with your trousers around your ankles. Do you know what I mean? It's I have great nights here, and I really enjoy Hollywood. It's like a sort of. For someone who doesn't come from here, it's like a movie theme park, the whole place. You know, you're walking around and you're seeing people and sights from films and these incredibly historic studio complexes, which are just so thrilling to be around, you know, because of what's been made there. But I guess I've had my fair share of Dan the Cat and the Fiddle, some of the expats.
Because in London you must be recognised all the time.
I don't. It's kind of like here. People don't really care. I mean, it's difficult to walk into a pub now, but generally speaking, it's worse in the satellite towns. That's where, because people don't expect to see you, so then they go a bit nuts if they see you. Whereas in London, people kind of same as LA. You know, you expect to see Brad Pitt walking down the street. That's where he lives.
Your space DVD had some impressive guests. Did guys like Tarantino, Matt Stone, and Kevin Smith just have encyclopedic knowledge of space?
They're just, you know, they've just been really supportive of us, and ever since Shaun of the Dead, and I think have got into space back, you know, retroactively, and they're just really, they're just, you know, it's very cool to have people like that on your side, and you know, we asked them if they would mind doing that, and they were all very amenable. So, and of course, like Quentin's like a kind of a sponge, you know, he just it consumes knowledge and that, nothing else, just films. And but he is incredible. He has the most amazing recall, and when him and Edgar get together, I just sort of think, oh, I don't even feel like a geek anymore. I feel like a kind of jock when I'm with those two, because they're so they know so much, you know.
Do you have any plans to work with those guys?
I'd love to. I very nearly worked with Quentin this year, but some scheduling problems got in the way. And yeah, any one of those guys. I'm a fan of all of them, so you never know.
Was that for Inglourious Basterds?
Yeah.
So you must be pretty annoyed about that, then.
Yeah. But, you know, he promised to put me in the next one, so...
It's been almost a year since the Hollywood Reporter said that there would be an American version of Space. Is there anything...
Yeah, they made a pilot, and it didn't get picked up. So, end of story.
Secretly relieved.
Publicly relieved.
Okay. I'm curious. Obviously, Edgar's working on Scott Pilgrim. How is that... affected your guys' writing of a third film together, and what's going on with you in the writing with Nick and other various things you might be working on?
Well, it's meant that Edgar and I haven't been able to write together, obviously, because he's been here and I've been there. He's coming over to the UK next week, and we're going to have a day of getting the foundations laid for it, at least for the next film. Nick and I are currently trying to finish off what will be the shooting draft of Paul, and obviously, Greg Mottola's on board, as you know, and we've shot some tests for it, and we'll be, with a bit of luck, we'll be shooting it next year in New Mexico.
What do you miss most when you're not in England?
My dog. She's a miniature schnauzer. And my wife, obviously, but she tends to come with me, so... just normal life. Just I'm quite a homebody, and I kind of prefer this normality to the madness, and I guess I miss the normalness of life.
What American stuff have you gotten into, like food or TV shows?
Chipotle. It's just a word I see everywhere. I haven't even tasted it yet, but I love it. I love American TV. We get a lot of American TV. I'm a big fan of Entourage and Heroes and Lost, and you know, there's so much great American serial television. I mean, it's the best in the world for, you know, for those, not only for tempting great actors back from the film into TV, but just great storytelling and great production values. I've been loving Flight of the Conchords, which I know is Kiwi, but it's a HBO show. And you guys have got to watch Summer Heights High, which starts on HBO this month. Most incredible show from Australia. A guy who's like Ricky Gervais times three. Summer Heights High. It's set in a high school in Australia. He plays three characters. Each one of them as good as David Brent.
If really?
Not, yeah.
Wow.
It's incredible.
Now, Ricky Gervais wrote an episode from The Simpsons. Have you ever had ambitions to do the same?
Of course. I mean, I love The Simpsons. I'm a big fan. I actually was doing an interview at Fox in Phoenix recently, and there was a Simpsons couch in the foyer which you could sit on with The Simpsons. And I took a picture of myself giving Lisa a kiss on the cheek, and I sent it to Yeardley Smith, who I met recently at a thing. And I suddenly thought, wow, was that creepy? But she sent me an email back saying that she thought it was sweet. So, I'm a big fan of The Simpsons. And I think she's trying to... what I'd love to do is to have a Halloween special and have Sean and Ed from Shaun of the Dead be in a Halloween special of The Simpsons. I think that would be great.
Talk to some of the Star Trek actors over the last year about how they're paying respect to the original performances but doing their own thing. So, Scotty obviously was Scottish. What kind of voice are you doing?
My wife's family. Kind of Western Scotland, Glaswegian, kind of West Coast Scottish accent, which is very different from the East and indeed the North and South. But her family's from Glasgow, and I spend a lot of time in Glasgow, so I try to do that.
How awesome is it to just walk on that set, J.J. Bill?
That's boring. No, it was amazing. I remember the first time I stepped on set in my whatever. I remember I was actually stood next to JJ, and I actually did a very deliberate step onto the bridge, and it was one small step for man, one giant leap for geek kind.
So how are the plans going for the final installment of the Cornetto trilogy?
We just got to sit down and write it, really. I mean, it's just a question of getting on with the nitty-gritty of the hardest part, really, which is starting from scratch. But we're formulating good ideas, I think. I think it's going to be pretty insane.
You're obviously friends with JJ. JJ is involved with a lot of good television. And you haven't done a lot of television recently, but would you consider doing an episode of Lost? Or would you Fringe? Or have they asked you?
I haven't seen Fringe yet, actually, because we've not got it in the UK yet. But, yeah, I mean, I would I'd love to do an episode of Lost, just so I could find out what's going on before. He would never... I would try and get information out of JJ on the set of Star Trek about Lost, the fourth season, and he would never tell me. He's brilliant at keeping secrets, JJ. I mean, I was like, come on, tell me who the Oceanic Six are at least, and he's like, no.
And so what's going on? So you obviously, it's the end of September right now, and you said you're going to be working on Paul next year. So what's the next few months for you like?
Holiday. I just really want to take a break. I really want to just get out of this time for me is always is kind of dizzying and this is a very necessary part of the job, and I think anyone that shirks it is irresponsible, really, because you do have a duty to whatever you've done to make sure it gets seen, and particularly when we do our own stuff, we have to get out there and take it to the people ourselves. But this, I always feel that, without any disrespect, that this is the part you get paid for. This is the job of the job, and the acting, all that stuff, that's what you do for free, because it's just like messing about, it's just fun. But then this is a very, very necessary and important part of the job, and it's always, for me, it's just always like, difficult. So I'm going to take a break afterwards and just go sleep.
So, valuing the importance of this process, what do you think of Toby's perspective, which is, to say the least, contemptuous of it? Maybe?
I don't know, but Toby is just a pathological self-promoter. He kind of loves it. I think he's there's something about it which he delights in. I think the whole thing in the film is that the reason Sidney wants to tear it all down is because he's desperate to be inside it. He's desperate to be part of it, and because he isn't, he resents it. And I think that represents probably a certain cross section of the media, whereby there is this disdain and this hatred for the very thing that they're reporting on, because essentially they're not in it. Do you know what I mean? There are people that set up these websites that just say terrible things about people who are, for want of a better word, celebrities. And then those people end up becoming celebrities themselves because of their doing it. It's like a snake eating its own tail.
Who could you be talking about?
It's apocalyptic. Oh, I don't know.
Would you let any females, date a guy like Sidney Young?
Would I let... certainly not my sister or my... No, definitely not my wife. Well, my wife is weirdly dating a girl a little bit like Sidney Young, facially. I don't know. He's not a bad guy. He's kind of contemptuous in some respects, but... when it comes to, he's got a good heart. I think that's what you learn about him in the movie, is that he's a good guy. He's just desperately trying not to be for some reason. Maybe it's a kind of self-defense thing, a preemptive, I'll make you hate me before you hate me for no reason kind of thing. But I'd have to meet him and maybe talk to him for a while and, see if he's worthy of my daughter. He's bloody good looking, so,
Can you talk about the first moment you met Megan Fox? I mean, did time sort of stand still? Is she that beautiful?
For her, it did. Megan did the film because she was a fan of Shaun of the Dead, so I kind of had a... it wasn't like I had to kind of jump up and down to get her attention, she walked on set and the air disappeared from the room. It was, she is... extraordinary, and she's incredibly beautiful, but she's also pretty down to earth and a bit geeky. She's a comic book fan and she likes surfing, and she's she's not an untouchable by any means. She was quite jet lagged when I met her. I thought she was blinking to be sort of seductive, but it wasn't. It's because she was tired.
So what is the most embarrassing date you have had?
Embarrassing date?
Yes.
I don't know. I get asked this. I wasn't really a dater. I think I relied mainly on coincidence and alcohol before I got married. I never sort of asked a girl out on a date particularly. I think a couple of times, maybe when I was younger. I don't know. I was thinking about this recently. I don't know how I ever managed. I was quite a serial monogamist. You know what I mean? I kind of got into. What are we talking about? This has got nothing to do with anything.
Okay, I'll go on to the success of Spaced, the American version of the DVD. Were you surprised at it? It was very popular, and the sales on that.
Yeah, I was amazed. We were completely blown away by it, actually, and I think it sold something like 1.3 million copies or something, which is for a obscure British sitcom is pretty impressive here. So I was delighted, and it's a nice vindication for us because we always hoped it would do well here.
You guys obviously did a lot of promoting at Comic-Con. So what was this year like versus a previous year that you've been there?
Well, you didn't get hit on the head by a falling stanchion, for one.
They're not going to
know. Steve was injured at Comic-Con. I've only been there once before. It was more crowded. It was more insane. Well, the first year I went there, it was before Shaun of the Dead came out. So I was able to move around very freely. And then this year I had to wear a mask.
did you actually wear a mask?
Yeah. So I could get on the convention floor and actually see some stuff. And that was only because that is the very heart of our kind of demographic there. You know, having done Shaun of the Dead and Hot Fuzz, those are the kind of people that would watch those films. And so, of course, I'm going to find it difficult to move around there because there's a lot of people that want to say hi and are always very nice. But once you start doing that, it's difficult to stop.
That's what Shatner said he did in his book. He would wear a mask and go on the...
Yeah, didn't he wear a mask of his own face or something? Yeah.
What was your mask?
The Joker. One of those Joker masks from Batman, you know.
Elijah Wood, I think, wore a Stormtrooper outfit.
Really?
A few years ago and went through the convention.
Isn't he a little short for a Stormtrooper?
He is a little short for a Stormtrooper. Would you consider doing one of the, like a full-on outfit? Or would you just... I mean, the mask is good enough.
I was sweating enough in that mask. I think if it was a kind of... I don't know. It was actually quite nice. It was quite liberating to be able to just wander around and not. Although weirdly enough, I was drawing looks, but only because I was wearing a mask, not because I was the guy from that film.
So what did you buy on the convention floor this year?
I bought a Ed action figure from Sideshow Collectibles, which they ended up giving me for free.
Is that when you take off the mask and say, could I maybe get one? Or?
No, I didn't. I didn't actually have... I hadn't learned my lesson about the mask at that point. I was just out there. But that was one reason to not wear a mask, was to get free stuff.
Isn't it weird, though? I've heard this from other actors, that when you're trying to come up, you have to pay for everything. And once you have the money to be able to buy stuff, you get it all for free.
I know, it's crazy.
So what's the best gift you've gotten from someone for whatever reason?
Well, I got, having made that contact with Sideshow at Comic-Con, they sent me two boxes of action figures, just like two boxes full of zombies and stuff, and it was great.
As a great fan of movies, how does it feel to be making big budget Hollywood movies?
It feels really, it's cool, you know. It's sort of, I feel like, what is it, the little something that could? I feel like I'm still a fan, and I'm still the same as I ever was, but I'm actually managing to somehow exist within it as well, which is fun, you know, to be able to. I'm still as impressed by all that stuff as I ever was. I just happen to be participating in it as well, and I feel very lucky. I feel very privileged, you know.
Do you get starstruck very often?
Yeah, all the time. I mean, you know, whenever you meet anyone that you've seen on the TV or you admire, you get that initial moment of sort of, wow, it's them. But then inevitably you meet them and they're just absolutely, you know, normal, ordinary, sweet people, as most people are.
Who's the last person that you were starstruck by?
When was the last? Oh, I tell you what, I met Matthew Fox at the... who was in, you know, I'm a big fan of Lost, and I kind of saw him at a party at Comic-Con, and he saw me, and just as I was about to say hello, I went, oh man, Simon Pegg! So I was really kind of like chuffed that I was put at my ease, because him and his wife are big fans of the movie. So that sometimes helps, you know, it's a calling card. Like when I have gone up to people that I really admire, when I met George Lucas, actually, he was talking to Ron Howard, and just as I got introduced, and I saw George Lucas's face go, oh, here's another fucking 30-something geek that's going to bore me to death about how much Star Wars changed his life. And Ron Howard leant over and went, hey, Simon, I love Shaun of the Dead. My kids are big fans. And George Lucas's attitude immediately changed towards me. And we had a conversation as equals and not as kind of fanboy and, you know, whatever he is now.
You you almost did essentially a third season of... you almost did something for Spaced with because of the American version.
Yeah.
And you wrote something and you put it on your blog. And were you disappointed that you actually ended up not making it? Did you have that inside that you really wanted to do it?
Yeah, I did, because I wanted to get everybody together and do Spaced and do something off Spaced again. And so the Spaced stroke Cloverfield thing never actually happened, but it just struck me as the funniest response to having Spaced essentially forcibly taken away from us by an American production company was to have a scene in which the Statue of Liberty's head crashed into their front garden, you know, which is a beautifully literal representation of what was happening to us. And and we also, like, Double Negative, who did the special effects for Cloverfield, are our friends because they've done Shaun of the Dead and Hot Fuzz, and they had the plate, and JJ was going to let us use the plate of this effect, so we do it all on handheld video and end up with this moment. And we didn't have to do it because Fox canned the pilot. Woohoo!
But for fans, that was almost their third season.
Yeah, it was good. It was fun writing, actually. I mean, I made a point of saying that I hadn't written it with Jess or Edgar, and it couldn't be considered canon, as it were. But it was like
You made that decision.
Yeah, because I figured, you know, Spaced is a product of our combined endeavor. It's not.
That was all the time
we have. Okay. Thanks, guys. Yeah, sure.